You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. Today, I welcome researcher and investigator Rick Allen to Mysteries and Monsters. Rick has spent decades immersed in the world of ufology and has reached some intriguing and disturbing theories. For decades, people have reported encounters with strange alien beings. All across the world, many experiencers believe that these are carbon-based life forms. But what if they aren't? What if these are clone soldiers covertly operating on Earth? What if this is some kind of secret invasion by another race of humans? Rick's theories will perhaps open a potential avenue that many have never considered before. But before we get to Rick's startling revelations, don't forget you can support Mysteries and Monsters on patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content, and more. Thank you as always to each and every one of my patrons who make every month a little easier to deal with. Thank you for your continued and much appreciated support. Mysteries and Monsters is across all social media platforms, depending on whatever name they decide to call themselves these days. Please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. And don't forget, you can visit mysteriesandmonsters.com for episodes and Mysteries and Monsters merchandise. Thank you as always to Dean Bestall for his marvellous artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys, and Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange network. So, are we being silently invaded as we fall for the biggest sleight of hand ever conceived? Rick Allen certainly thinks so. For decades, people have experienced seeing and encountering strange creatures of varying shapes and sizes. Many presume these encounters are with an alien being or two. But my guest today, Rick Allen, believes that these creatures are simply a military faction ruled over by another group of humans from another planet Earth. Rick, welcome to Mysteries and Monsters.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
Absolute pleasure, sir. Obviously, we have a mutual friend, Mr. Paul Sinclair.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued when Paul sort of mentioned you and your research and your interests, Rick. But I'm always really intrigued about what gets people interested in this subject. As someone that used to have a deep love of ufology growing up as a teenager into my 20s, I kind of fell out of love with it all by the end of the 90s and stayed away for quite a while. And now my deep interest in this subject has been reinvigorated since I've started doing this show, Rick. What was it for you that sort of made you, before you even got to the theories and strands of your research that you are now in, where did you start? What was it? Was it a specific case that got you in it? Did you have a sighting? How did you get your foot in the door of ufology, Rick?
I can never actually remember a time that I wasn't interested in the paranormal. There was always something fascinating regarding all aspects here and what it could be. My real passion was wildlife, animals, but this kind of crossed over into all sorts of sciences and eventually the paranormal. And I remember at about 20 year old, I decided I was going to make a conscious effort to try and get some answers to the UFO questions. So by about 2021, I had actually, I believed UFOs were real, Paul. I didn't need any more proof to myself for that. From that point on, it was then about what was actually taking place here. Because obviously for UFOs from another planet to be visiting us, it means they have hyper technology. They're super advanced. I don't believe they're traveling across space. I believe they're traveling through space, you know, portals, wormholes, things like that, because the distances are just so vast. And it wasn't so much the types of UFOs that fascinated me. It was more the types of so-called alien creatures that were getting encountered. Because I had because I was really grounded in wildlife, Paul, almost as a wee kid, I knew that there was questions regarding these entities that were being described. If they were being described accurately, and I had listened to so many encounters, I didn't have any reason to doubt what the people were saying. But I could see there was a problem with sort of the laws of nature. Mm. You know, there was something going on here that couldn't be explained. And in the end, for the past 25 years, I've been working on one theory to try to explain it all. And I came to the conclusion that the Greys, the Reptilians, the Arcturians, what they all were, they weren't any different species for different planets. What they were was they were genetically engineered human beings from another planet Earth. Mm. Essentially, they were a military force. They were the, if you want, the Air Force version, and the ground forces were the cryptids. I had a fascination with Bigfoot for an early age. Even the Loch Ness Monster had been here in Scotland. You know, that was always there or thereabouts. But they also, there were, seemed to be breaking rules. They seemed to be doing things that they shouldn't be able to do. Eventually, after devoting everything to it, I mean, literally devoting everything to it, Paul, I finally am ready at the point to kind of go forward with what I believe is happening. And I wish I was wrong. I have to say that now. I wish I wasn't drawing the conclusions that I'm coming to. You know, if somebody could make better sense of what's been reported, I would happily go along with it. So when you look at human history, you can see these entities. It doesn't matter what culture you go to, what time in humanity, these entities are always about, whether it's angels, divinities, godlike beings, creatures, cryptids, you know, local gods, or demonic type creatures such as Wendigos, Wraith, things like that. They're always there. And when you look at the effect that they have on human history, because if you keep a population of people in fear, Paul, you can control them.
Yeah.
And what it seemed to me that these entities were doing, and what they're especially doing now, is they're revealing themselves. So if you look at the sort of the latest Dogman encounters, what's happening is they're running out in front of cars. People are walking and they're hearing growls. You know, they're not acting like animals. There's plenty of reports of people in isolated areas where they hear tapping at the windows and they look and they see the Dogman grinning, looking in. These are the behaviours of animals. This is about terror. This is about creating fear, and fear creates control. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. And when you look at the different varieties, say if we start with aliens first, it's probably the most famous is the Greys.
Yes.
So when I look at the Greys, I see problems right away. First of all, is they're all identical to each other, which suggests cloning.
Yep.
When you look at the massive head, I can't see how that head could be burst. You know, it's just too big for the birth canal. They lack the sensitivity and emotions that comes with very, very intelligent creatures. I mean, as humans, we know the capabilities of just small gestures with our eyes and that. You know, that these things would have solid black eyes like sharks is very disturbing. And my heart goes out to the abduction victims who wake up to see these things standing around about them, looking down at them. I mean, it must be terrifying. I had also noticed that the colour of these entities, their skin colour, was the opposite of healthy human skin. So they were grey. Some of them are green. Some of them are blue. Some of them are pure white. There's never actually a report in our own colour. And I could see, is that somebody's trying to break the human form up into all these different beings. See, I don't believe there's any such thing as the Intergalactic Federation. There's only one species that, in my opinion, is traveling through space, and that's Homo sapiens. So, if you go back to the Greys, if you look at them, there's this lack of emotion in the face. There's this the emaciated look. You see, what I think we're looking at there, Paul, is drones. You know, like in an insect colony, you get the workers that are very uniform. You know, that look is important to make the group adhere to the group. when you look at them and the things they can do, they just seem to be the opposite of what evolution would do with a species like that. Some of the witnesses report they minus a thumb. Now you can't, if you didn't have a thumb, you can't build a UFO ball. There's three things that are absolutely required to build a spacecraft. You need a giant brain with intelligence. You need complex speech. But surprisingly of all, you need a hand with opposable thumbs that are capable of precision grip. If you don't have that, if any one of these is lacking, then the whole thing sort of falls down. And when we look at our own history, we know what it takes to put a craft into space. We know what it takes intelligence-wise. We know what it takes language to share that. It has to be the same thing everywhere else. So if you look at the... when we go to the reptilians, sort of the second biggest group, you can see there's problems with them as well. First of all, if they really are reptile-based, then to me that suggests that it's the four same DNA molecules that are being utilised: adenine, cytosine, guanine, and thymine. You know, if it really is based in reptile, you have to assume that they're facing the same biological things as we are, because it's the same 92 occurring elements throughout the universe, Paul. So it's the same ingredients. And if the laws of physics are universal, and they seem to be, and if the laws of chemistry are universal, and they seem to be, then it stands to reason the laws of biology will also be universal. So all life, wherever it is, because I believe that there are Earth-like planets. These are the pinnacles. But there might be moons like, say, Jupiter or Saturn that contain life and water. But in order to get to the place where a species builds a craft that comes to our planet, they have to follow a very precise order. So all life is water-based. It has to be water-based because no other liquid has the solvency properties of water. It can transport food, oxygen, medicines. It's brilliant for cooling. So all life is built on the water molecule. The second thing is the carbon atom. You know, what are the chances that life will be based on the carbon atom? Well, carbon has really unique properties. It's been calculated that there are at least 20 million different chemical reactions that involve carbon, Paul. So there is simply nothing else. That amount of reactions is what's crucial to life, goes within our body every day, every hour. There are thousands of reactions taking place. Carbon also is able to make macromolecules, so it's able to make long-chain molecules because of the way it's designed. It allows other atoms to bond to it. And also, it can form really stable long-chain molecules at sort of everyday temperatures, you know. So what it's encountering in life, there's nothing that's going to come along in the environments of life that's going to break these molecules up. So it's very, very stable. So if you go down the line, we begin with water, and then we come to the carbon molecule. And the other thing about the carbon molecule is, obviously, these creatures, when they're coming to our planet, they're breathing in oxygen and they're breathing out carbon dioxide. They have to be. And if they're breathing out carbon dioxide, then you have to assume that they are involved in the carbon cycle, meaning they breathe out carbon, the plants take in the carbon, use photosynthesis, create food, and then animals eat the food, and then the animal dies and it's released back to the environment again. So I think just by that we think that they seem to be able to breathe our atmosphere without any problem would suggest that they come from a similar atmosphere. And atmosphere is very much formed by the size of the planet. You know, our atmosphere is what we're because of the size of planet Earth, Paul. If it was a few percent bigger, it would change. If it was a few percent smaller, it would change. So what that tells me is they're breathing a similar thing. They're taking an oxygen, breathing out carbon. So that suggests to me, at least, in theory-wise at least, that they are involved in the same sort of cycle. So if you follow that line, if you go down that line and start to add, we'll say the reptilians, if they're really based, as I say, on reptiles, then you have to guess that they evolved for reptiles. But then there's a problem with that. See, we have our brain is like nothing else. Mammals have what's called the neocortex, the sixth layer neocortex, and reptiles didn't have that, Paul. So I would suggest it would be impossible for a reptile to evolve the brain in order to create a UFO to fly to this planet. It's the same with the hands. So, well, if we start with bipedalism, for as amazing as the reptiles are, I mean, they spawned the dinosaurs, they spawned the mosasaurs, birds, everything. But in the 315 million years that they've existed, there's never once been an example of an upright humanoid reptile. There has been bipedal reptiles, but they tended to be like, say, Tyrannosaurus shaped, you know, the long tail out of the bark. And the only way to create the hands that we have is for it to go into the trees for millions of years. That's the only way to create the opposable thumb and the precision grip. And when you see the reptiles that have taken to the trees, they simply didn't go down that line. See, when they walk, you can see how their bodies move from side to side, Paul, you know, getting that sort of motion of the day. Well, when you imagine a reptile in the tree, it has to be on a certain width of branch. The only ones that are really specialized are the chameleons, and it's like their feet have developed into little sort of oven gloves, you know, the way they think the toes are fused together. That's as specialized as the reptiles have got. There's in no other way have we found any other example of a hand like humans have been formed like that. And then when we came out of the trees, our ancestor Homo erectus seemed to be using tools for at least 1.8 million years before us. So that would have finessed, you know, got our neural skills, because the hand doesn't work by its own. It has to co-evolved with the developing neocortex that humans have. It's my contention that you can't have a reptilian that has these things. Well, I think Bear explains it as you start with a human genome and you splice in reptilian features. So you change the shape of the skull. You take the genes out where the skin is and put in the genes that produce the sort of leathery type skin of the reptiles. You know, you do things like that. That's how you create a reptilian. What I can't see is how it could do that by itself by natural methods. So when I look at all these different species, and now there's kind of over 100 reptilian species, all I see, Paul, is in genetically engineered human beings. And 20 years ago, I couldn't advance this theory, but look at what we're doing with genetics now. I mean, we have little fish that glow in the dark because we put in the genes of a jellyfish. They're, you know, transplanting human hearts grown in pigs. You know, they're already creating chimeras. What I'm suggesting is that if we have a human planet Earth, a civilization that's at least 100,000 years more advanced than us, what could they be creating? And what I think when we see, like, say, the reptilian, the greys, the Sasquatch, the dogmen, this is what we're seeing. This is what the army of future looks like. Because the dogmen are not, they're super soldiers as far as I'm concerned. See, when we think of super soldier, Paul, we think of a man kitted out in the, you know, the night vision goggles and all the weapons.
Yeah.
That's not a super soldier. What a super soldier is, it has nothing by itself. It can run any prey down in the land. It can run deer down. It's so strong, it is the weapon. It could go and without communicating with the mothership for years at an end. It could go deep, deep cover. So what we believe is, we believe we're dealing with a natural species. And it's really clever because there are examples all around the world where the local groups have managed to get the Bigfoot, you know, protected, you know, you're not allowed to disturb them, this sort of thing. And it's coming from a good place, but all we're doing is inviting evil in. So what I'm suggesting is there's going to be an invasion at some point. What we see everything building towards is they're coming back. And all through human history, I mean, I've written about 25 different civilizations that have disappeared without a trace. What they would do is they would come, they would give people astronomy and agriculture, they would build these stone, you know, monuments like the Stonehenge, different things like that that are accurate for 2,000 years. We teach them how to work the calendar out, when to plant, and then they build up the population. They come back after 2,000 years and they crop them. Then they leave the land becomes overgrown. This is why in the Amazon jungle they're now finding that was once all cultivated. They're finding what they thought was virgin rainforest in West Africa is in fact was once cultivated. So I think the history of our planet speaks to us. And I think when you look at it through this lens, I think this is the best yet most terrifying explanation that it could be, because they are definitely coming back. If you look at what's happening with the cryptid reports, Paul, I find it very suspicious that Bigfoot in Canada are revealing themselves just as Bigfoot in France are, or dogmen in Austria are revealing themselves like dogmen in Britain. And you can see it's not just that they're being captured more because of social media. What's happening is they're actually being seen more and more in urban areas. They're taking control of the land, Paul. They already own the night. You know, that's theirs. What they're doing is they're driving people into their homes.
Yeah. When you look at some of the alleged races that people encounter when they have experiences, before we even consider the cryptid conundrum, Rick, I've always been a little bit perturbed by the variation. I mean, as you say, this is basic evolution in action, especially when we're talking about the reptilians and the variations of insectoids and things like this.
Because,
as you say, all life should essentially have the same building blocks. If we look at every species on this planet, and there are some weird and wonderful ones. From my personal favourites are octopi, Rick. I just think they are
amazing.
They're just creatures that baffle me because they just seem to be able to do anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, you see certain species that can disguise themselves as other creatures. They can change their colour. They can change their shape. They can work out problems. They are.
Unscrew the lid on jars and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. There are famous cases of octopus. I think there was one in a zoo where they changed the light at night, and then they kept having to change the bulb, and they didn't understand what was going on, and then they set a camera up, and they realised that the octopus was opening its tank and squirting water to blow the bulb up because it didn't like
Whoa.
The colour.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So, you know, and that's just our limited experience with them, because obviously, especially when it comes to creatures of the sea, Rick, we know very little. We know very
exactly.
little about the sea, really. And often it's a cliche that we know more about the moon than we do about the bottom of the ocean. But it's probably true, because you look at something as near as that, and yet it's in the concept of our exploration and our thirst for discovery that seems to drive us. Be it climbing the biggest mountain or swimming the furthest or whatever, Rick, that when it comes to the ocean, it seems almost inconsequential what we know so far, because it's probably a tiny percentile of everything. So there could be anything.
Exactly.
So when people talk about the reptilians, and as you're talking about gene splicing and things like that, I've always kind of considered that when we look at our own history here, as you've referred to there about some of the experiments that are going on in regards to transplants and just sort of gene tinkering, I think it sometimes it's quite disturbing, because obviously you only have to look at the work of someone like Vladimir Demikov, who was a Russian scientist or a Soviet, because obviously he was throwing strange experiments around in the 50s.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy who was desperately trying to create some kind of dog chimera, as you say.
That's right.
I mean, the footage is out there, if you've never seen it, or anybody listening to this,
it's horrifying.
It's not much shocks me, Rick, I have to say, especially doing this program.
Yeah.
But I've seen that footage once, and if I never see it again, it'll be too soon. So
yeah.
We only have to look at some of the things that are going on, and are clearly going on, that we're not aware of, and we know the kind of experimentation that sadly goes on certain species of animals for a variety of pitiful excuses that are often put forward.
Yeah.
The reptilian one would be an obvious one, primarily for me, because if you're going to gene splice a species with human DNA to try and create
a super soldier.
Yeah, or a more robust version of a human, you would go to the reptile because of its ability to regenerate.
Exactly.
Limbs,
exactly, Paul.
You know, there are so many species that can grow a limb. Some species of lizards, their tails are designed to come off and grow back.
Yeah.
You know, there are species of insects. I mean, I think a cockroach can live 60 days without a head.
So,
I mean, these are the things sometimes, Rick, even when we're not talking about the paranormal, you look at the natural world, there are things.
It's amazing.
It just makes you scratch your head how these things.
Yeah.
Because it must have happened. And obviously, evolution is obviously the survival of the fittest, or the one that is the most adaptable, often, as we've seen. But yet, when you look at certain species of creatures, be they a mammal or a reptile or a bird, there are such distinct little niches that certain creatures hold that you just think, how the hell have we got to this point with them?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting aspect in regards to the gene splicing point, because for me, as someone, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm an expert in molecular biology and DNA splicing and gene tampering, Rick, but I know enough about what's happened and what people do.
Yeah.
To know that, I would imagine right now, somewhere in the world, there is a group
going
of, there is a group of scientists desperately trying to use reptile DNA.
Why would you continually send young soldiers into battle and have problems with PTSD when you could, when a bio company could create someone that owns a patent to, that doesn't have a mother, doesn't have a father, has no rights, is created in such a way that is designed to kill, will never suffer for anything like that. You know, because I believe the stomach has the juices, either vulture or hyena, they could live virtually on carrion if they have to, if they go deep undercover. And there's what you're saying about the natural world is a good point, Paul, because once you work out all the secrets of the natural world, then what I believe is you have the means to biological immortality. And what I believe is this group of people are referred to as the Pesha, and the Pesha is an acronym. It stands for Parasitic Engineered Cannibalistic Human Aggressors. Okay? And on their planet Earth, they got to the point where they achieved biological immortality. And what I mean by that is, as long as they aren't physically killed, they have found a way to regenerate their cells, they don't age, they've triumphed over all sorts of diseases. As long as they keep themselves safe, as long as they have access to materials, human products, and this is where this is all going, then they could technically, theoretically, keep their cell alive forever. However, there's a problem, because on any planet Earth, eventually the sun will go supernova, and you have to get off your planet. If you're serious about immortality, you must find another planet Earth. Okay? And this is what I believe has gone on, Paul. That this is the point they're at. They have biological immortality. They wiped out. See, once you master triumph over death, then there's certain things that have to happen. You can't have any more breeding. Okay, that's if you, because they're at the point their population was getting overcrowded on their planet. They had to do something. Everybody couldn't get immortality, Paul. So there was only a few percent of the select few, the scientists, the doctors, those that own bio companies, those military leaders that can bring weapons and that. So I believe there are millions of these people. All these ones were born for women. But then, once they took control of their planet Earth, they then created these super soldiers. So there will be a domestic workforce, you know, that will keep their communities, their civilization ticking over. So, but these ones, the ones that go off planet, for want of a better word, these have to be part of this massive deception. And I didn't believe there's been a single UFO that's crashed. I believe every single one has been put down on purpose in order to pass on technology and also pass on different types of alien. So perhaps the Russians have retrieved craft that have a reptilian type. Perhaps Americans have retrieved craft that have a grey type. And then there's all the variations on that. So what this does, and then the ones that are found alive, if they still live during the crash, because they are now aware that their masters have purposely crashed them, Paul, they then feed false information into whoever captors they've got them. You see? So this is where I think they're gone. And there's a lot of flawed things that just didn't make common sense. One of the things that I often hear is we might not even recognise life when we see it. But that just doesn't make any sense, Paul, because, like I said, everything has to start the same way. It's the same ingredients that are at work. So it has to follow certain lines, certain biological principles. Convergent evolution is almost certainly a thing. So what they're doing is, I hear people saying, well, if they were going to harm us, if they were going to do something to us, they would have done it by now. Yeah, but that's not assuming that they want billions of people to harvest. You see, what I think they're waiting for is the world population hits billions, and then they're going to come, because in the ensuing carnage and the famine, the disease and everything is going to come, billions are going to die, Paul. I mean, I feel a bit bad laying this on you like this, mate. I really do, but it's the reality of what I really believe is going to happen, eh?
Yeah.
So what they're looking for is, because in order to, if you're looking to cheat death, you're facing things that's not how nature works. So you need all kinds of human products in order to stay on top of it. And the best flesh, the best food you can eat as a human being is other human beings. That's just the reality of it, Paul. And the other thing is, if they develop, let our civilizations develop for thousands of years, we then take all the stuff, the gold, the iron ore, everything out of the planet. They didn't then have to do the heavy work. Look, there's 1 billion cars in America alone. Imagine if a UFO just went along lifting up the cars, melted them down, brought them up to their basic elements. You could see what's actually going on there. So I think it's a flawed conception to think that, well, if they were going to harm us, we would have done it for now.
Mm.
Look, mankind's been fighting for thousands of years, and that's part of that's their doing, basically, because it's divide and conquer. This is what's going on here. Divide and conquer, fear and wonder. So they keep us fighting so that we didn't actually see what's going on. But I think when you step back and when you look at it through this lens, Paul, I think rather frighteningly it starts to make a bit more sense.
Well, I think this is one of the strange things that always still makes me scratch my head sometimes, Rick, when we talk about people, because there often is two camps in the alien contact world. There's either,
at least, yeah,
well, that's what I mean. I'm on a basic level, there's either the people that think they're here to help or the people who think they're here to hurt.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it.
And never the twain do mix. As with any aspect of the paranormal, Rick, as I'm sure you're aware with a deep interest in it, it doesn't matter what you're in, there will usually be two camps who have ideas that are the polar opposites of each other.
Absolutely.
And I've always found it interesting looking back at the history of the contactee movement and experiences that when it all sort of kicked off in the late 40s, early 50s, and people were claiming that they were being taken to faraway planets and moons and being introduced to places, a lot of these creatures that they were meeting at that particular period seemed to be quite human-based, which is always,
yeah,
one of the things when you think about certain cases like the André Vias Boas case from South America,
yeah,
which is also one of those weird cases where we have a distinctly female alleged alien, Rick.
Yeah.
Because often when we hear people talk about their experiences, as you know, as you've referred to about the greys or the reptilians or the insectoids or whatever, they all seem to be quite sexless. Nobody seems to sort of,
that's right,
point it out. And as you refer to the,
yeah,
greys, if anything, they look like they're clones or robots,
yeah,
or whatever, something. Yeah.
Genderless almost, yeah.
They're absolutely just there, aren't they? They're just a person. We don't know what they are. Nobody seems to report seeing breasts or genitalia. They,
yeah,
just seem to be big head, big eyes, small mouth,
yeah,
two arms, two legs and a body. And that's it.
Yeah.
And you just,
yeah,
think, well, even as on a intrinsic level, you begin to think, well, how do they reproduce?
Exactly.
And I have to say, I've often thought this in regards to greys, especially out of all of the pantheon of alien visitors, that if anybody's going to be a clone or test tube created, even, to put it on a simple level, Rick,
yeah,
the greys would be the prime example for that, because they all look the same.
Exactly.
They all seem to just be wandering about doing stuff. And I've read and heard so many people who've had encounters like this where they seem to be behaving in more of a sort of shore party or a scout party,
yeah,
acting on orders from higher. And I know there are certain people who have had experiences where they've encountered the Greys or smaller beings, and then they've then gone on a ship or had an experience and found themselves surrounded by something else which seems to be in charge. So when you have those cases, it's almost as if there's some kind of hierarchy, because once again, even on a biological level, if you've got two completely different species, it's very rare, even on this planet, that you would get two species of completely different types living together. Obviously, humans are probably a prime example of the rarest example of that, where we keep pets. We've got pets of all kinds. We've got people who keep arachnids, lizards. We've got cats. We've got dogs. We've got rabbits. We've got birds. We've got every species of creature on this planet. I would imagine there is somebody out there, Rick, who's got a pet of one of them.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
I always remember seeing a documentary about a guy who had a pet alligator, and he used to get in the bath with him. And I thought, well, this is going to be a very... I have a feeling that there may be a sting in the tail of this particular story at some point. Hey, prove me wrong, though, because, the wonderful thing about nature is when you think you know how animals will react in certain situations, you will come across something where you just think, how on earth? Why is that not just eating everybody? So I suppose, Rick, without wishing to sort of cast aspersions on what you've said or anything, one of the things, as we're talking about the different types of creatures people encounter, then when we are looking at what you're theorizing and what you've come to believe over your research, what about the Nordics then? What are they in this? Are they some kind of better version of the other genetic experiments?
It's like good cop, bad cop, okay? And what you'll find, so the Nordics has been, or the Arcturians has been alluded, they had connections to Hitler, and Hitler spoke about this special technology that was coming. You see, the breaker population up to distinct groups, and they send distinct types of alien to them. I think they're all bad, Paul. They may look as though they're being helping, but it's just all part of the degree of deception. See, touching again on the abduction, if I took somebody, took them into a house and probed them, I would be done with kidnapping and sexual assault. What the Greys have done to people, they didn't have to do it to them consciously. You know, the technology exists, that they have the technology that they could just take somebody out of their house and then put them back in, and they would never know the difference. But no, they wake them up, they tell them they're not going to hurt them, and then they stick a needle into their stomach, you know, and then the abductees, they very often show the same symptoms as sexual abuse survivors, PTSD. So when you look at things like that, one single strand of DNA would virtually explain the entire population. You took a strand for each, that's all you need, Paul, a strand of hair to examine the DNA for different populations around the world, you would have all the answers to human beings that you could ever hope to get. This is about excuses to cause fear, you know, to assault, to hurt. So when you look at different groups, so what seems to happen is certain alien types will say that the other types are bad, so the Greys are often made out to be evil, but this type's good. But then this other type, who they're working with, will tell you, this type's bad, but they're really good. When you put them all together, what you just see is a massive deception. It's a massive psyops. They're actually all bad. They all fit the same narrative. If you put them all together and then you think about genetic engineering, you could see how you could arrive at each of them by manipulating the genome of a Homo sapien.
Do you think as well, then, that this Malkavechian plan that these individuals have, their version of our planet then, Rick, are they in a parallel dimension? Are they at some point of the universe that they've got a wormhole that they can get here?
Wormholes is how they're doing it. It's already been theorized, you know, with enough energy that could be done, and it's the only way they could be reaching us, Paul. And when you see UFOs disappear in front of you and then appearing sort of 2 or 3 miles to east or west, that seems to be that technology that's been employed. So what I'm suggesting is on a bigger scale, there is teleporting and there is wormholes. But I would absolutely bet everything that they're from this galaxy. What we know for sure is that our planet Earth is a tied to your yellow dwarf star. There is 40 billion yellow dwarf stars in our galaxy alone, Paul. If just 1%, a 1%, a 1%, a 1% has life on it, that's 400 planets. You know, and if they're at different stages here, and look, there are yellow dwarf stars in our galaxy that are almost a billion years older than us. There is definitely stars in this galaxy that could have civilizations that are far more advanced than we are. So, I don't, look, if you see it on this planet, that means it exists in the same dimensions as us, three spatial and one time. I really understand why people get caught up in the parallel universe theory, considering there's at least 2 trillion galaxies in our observable universe. What I think they're trying to do is, this may be the first time they've done this with a planet, or it may be the second or third time they've done it. What they will do is they will keep taking planet Earth and keep driving their technology forward to eventually they go to leave the galaxy. Eventually. But that takes millions and millions of years to get to that point, Paul. But if you're going for immortality, a million years is just a blink of an eye. So you have to get off your planet. But they're definitely, because the sun will go supernova. So that has to happen. That's the absolute guarantee that we can be sure. We know that our planet will go supernova. And it's nature's way of stopping, you know, our species from going forward and taking other things. Everything is brought to an end at some point. The elements are already cycled, new stars are formed, and then life starts all over again.
Yeah.
They're absolute believer in the same galaxy as us.
Yeah. Well, I think often it's the arrogance of human intelligence, Rick, that we seem to feel that, and you hear it sometimes from certain scientists, they will say, well, we know the answer to everything now. And I just think that is the most deluded and arrogant statement anybody could ever make, because you look at us as a species, we've been tampering with getting off this planet properly since the late 1950s.
That's right.
So we're talking 75 years tops. And as you say, if we believe that the age of the universe is supposed to be currently between 12 and 15 billion years old, as you say, even on a basic mathematical principle, the chances in all this space and all these elements and all these galaxies and all these universes that we are the only living creatures, or everything on this planet is the only living creature, I just find the height of arrogance, regardless of whether you believe in UFOs coming to Earth.
That's right.
It's,
I agree.
It's very frustrating that it seems to be quite one of these mainstream belief systems, because it is a belief system. Because there's no proof that that a planet 200 million light years away has no life in it. They can presume or speculate, but they can't prove it. They can just say, I don't think there is. And so for me to think that if a species gets all the right ingredients at the right time and the right elements are in that area a billion years ago, and it just takes one species to survive longer than it did here, then
to avoid asteroid strikes.
Yeah, of course. You only have to, at the end of the day, the very existence on life on Earth is paper thin, because we could get a message next week and NASA say, oh my God, we've just seen this enormous thing on its way and it's just past Neptune.
Yeah,
that would be it.
Yeah.
You only have to look at the moon to see just how many asteroids come round here.
That's right.
And we're fortunate because obviously, you know, near over 2/3 of this planet are covered in water. That also helps a great deal, though it didn't do much for the dinosaurs, if we're led to believe where the one struck there, because it's supposed to hit in the Gulf of Mexico.
That's right.
I mean, that would have been a tsunami I'd like to have seen.
Imagine
how big that would have been. But it just shows you how fragile it is. And even in the last 100-odd years, Rick, you look at probably the most famous, well, we're not even sure what it was. We think it was
the Tunguska.
Yeah, that happened in 1908. You look at that and you think two things. For me, the first time I ever saw this, I just thought, thank God it landed where it landed. Could you imagine something like that happening over a major city, regardless?
Yeah, That's right. No, you're exactly right. And when you look at the impact meters, we know that approximately every 10,000 years, one perhaps above 500 meters hits us, and in every 10 million years, one that's 1 kilometer hits us. See, this is just my own speculation with this, but I suspect that on most planet Earths, the human species doesn't manage to make it off. What happens is that because the pressure have been given us technology, Paul, we've advanced rapidly, and I suspect part of it is to try and grow us before the next asteroid strike or the next caldera explodes, something like that. But I think that most of them get to a point, there's an asteroid strike, civilization collapses, and then they find some sort of harmony again with nature. However, every now and again, the asteroid strikes will maybe take hundreds of thousands of years longer, and on a certain planet Earth, a certain civilization will be able to get off the planet. So I think this is a rare thing, but I do think it happens. And when you're right what you're saying, I mean, it's no coincidence the moon's there. It's no coincidence Jupiter and all that's there, because if the planets weren't there, Paul, life would have been wiped out. And we know that these strikes, the dinosaurs got the chance because the reptiles got wiped out. The mammals got the chance because the dinosaurs got wiped out. You know, it seems to be a part of the evolutionary progress in the planet. So these other planets have to be going through the same thing. These things are probably more frighteningly common than what we want us to believe. In a human lifetime, it's probably rare to see something like that. But once you start to draw it over thousands of years, you're absolutely right. These things are going on, and they're a real threat to humanity.
Yeah, I mean, what often, I suppose it's one of those scary things about the position we find ourselves in this day and age, Rick, with our technology. And you can only imagine how many close shaves have we had before we invented telescope?
Yeah,
Just
that's right.
maybe the Earth had a slight wobble or something like that. Because as we were saying about Tunguska, when they finally got there, which I think was about 1925 when they finally got there, so 17 years after it happened, it was still a scene of incredible, absolute devastation on incredible levels. I mean, there are little weird things about that, like that. I think the Times here in 1908 reported that they didn't need to put the street lamps on for 3 nights
That's right.
because the sky was so bright. And you think how far away Tunguska is from England. You just think, Gordon Bennett, and there are so many craters around the world that you look and think, when did that land? What did that do? Because it doesn't, when you start getting to, as you were saying about the size of certain meteors, if when you get to, you only look have to look at a tiddler, like what happened in was it Chelyabinsk, that one about 10 years ago in Russia.
That's right, yeah. You captured that one on video, eh? That's sort of
1,400 people got injured, and it didn't even hit anywhere.
That's right,
And
Paul.
it was
It's a good
what?
point.
I think they were saying it was as big as a fridge. We're not even to the size of a bus, Rick.
That's
So
right,
anything like that, I've seen so many reports about, on average, I think they reckon there's about 1,200 meteors a year hit Earth, and 99% of them land in the sea. Because
That's right,
if something comes down in the middle of the Indian Ocean or the Pacific Ocean, unless a satellite tracker's spotted it, we've got no idea. Nobody, no, there's
No,
nobody,
that's right.
there's nobody's going to see it.
That's right, mate.
Nobody's going to know
That's
anything
absolutely
about
right.
it. There might be a higher wave in Borneo or Madagascar or something, and that'll be it. That's all we'll know about the goal. The sea's a bit high today. It's remarkable that we sometimes seem to forget that. I think luck has had a lot to do with how we're still here today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely, Paul. I definitely agree totally with you there, mate.
So, for you, Rick, was there a particular case that kind of set you on this path? As when we're talking about, we talk about the Greys, probably the most famous case in the last 40 years is obviously Whitley Strieber in Communion. That probably brought the Grey into popular
Exactly.
culture.
Yeah.
Was there a particular case? Because obviously I love some of the weirder encounters that people have had, the Hopkinsville goblin for especially, because that's just a very odd case. The Flatwoods monster is another one.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's hard to ignore these cases Paul. I mean, they seem sort of small incidents, but then when you see the effect years later, how all over the world. I can't really tie it down to one thing, because once I accepted that UFOs were real, then I moved on to the next part. So I'm not, you know, I didn't spend a lot of time sort of wondering about the technology that they're using, you know, is it warp drives, that sort of thing. To me, it was, the bigger question was why they were here. Once I accepted they were here, it was what they were doing. That's what more drove me. Because the other thing I have to say is there seemed to be a niche in that area, I thought. You know, I noticed that all the researchers, the next UFO incident that came along, they were all, which is fair enough, that was their interest. But I kind of moved beyond that and said, wait a minute, this is where I want to go, you know. And then I started to see the relationship between cryptids, who allegedly were telepathic, and the Greys, who were telepathic, or the reptilians that were telepathic. So I've seen these bizarre kind of claims getting made, and I always thought to myself, well, if I was making it up about an alien encounter, I don't think I would say they were telepathic, or if I ran into a Sasquatch that used mind speak on me, you know, it just seemed to me that the people were being honest there, because you just wouldn't use these things unless it was actually happening. So these wee things, I could see they were linking these things, so they definitely started to split them into the cryptids and the aliens. So to me, and the ground forces, and that's kind of how I got to that point where I am. And where I am right now, it's now about going public. Because if I really believe what I'm saying, Paul, if I really absolutely have invested 25 years in this last single theory, then I have to go public with. So this is what I'm doing now. Mm. You know, speaking to like yourself, you know, here, you know, obviously I'm going to take a lot away from this and go away and think about what you said. So that's where I am. And I know it's not a popular thing to be said. You know, it's not, I wish it was the case, but I really feel it is the case. So, you know.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything yourself, like, Paul? Have you?
Well, I've only ever seen a strange thing in the sky once, but I'm one of those people, you know, I'm all in. I'm a big believer, but I'm also very sceptical about a lot of things as well. Right,
because, right,
as I'm sure when you've been in covering this, sometimes you'll come across some. I've got a nose for a fake story, you know.
Right.
Like the thing that's happened in Las Vegas recently, that everybody went mental over. The media were going mad about it. Apparently, that might now actually be a hoax. It didn't seem right at the time. The problem I think we've also got when we're talking about where we are these days is that it's very easy to misrepresent things, or the, you know, the amount of people who have shared footage from certain films going, look at this footage, and you're like, no, that's from that film. Have you not seen? Well, because everybody will see things, and still we try to be critical and analyze things, but often we are already making our minds up before we've even seen something, I think, Rick, because whether we're a skeptic or a believer or agnostic on any aspect of the weird, we will all still have personal biases. Whether we,
that's right,
any form of life, any part of your life, you are powered by unconscious bias, and it's difficult sometimes to push through it and try and look at things on face value and look at the evidence you're given, rather than go, oh well, I think that must be this because I believe in this, and it's It muddies the waters a lot, because not only have you got people who are asking big questions and scratching beneath the surface of the presumptions that often infiltrate this arena, there are also people who work on the opposite way, where they will always automatically, it's like a running joke when it comes to ufology. You know, swamp gas, isn't it? It's obvious. Swamp gas or a weather balloon.
Yeah, that's right.
But I was so struck when I saw what I saw, which happened in September 2010, because it was a ball of fire, as simple as that. So I knew what it wasn't, and I had the wherewithal to open and close all the windows, make sure it wasn't a reflection, turn lights off, turn lights on, move my position from where I could see it, check, make sure it wasn't headlights reflecting off something, because I was living near a busy road at the time, Rick.
Right.
I knew what it wasn't, but I can't tell you what it was. I'm not going to sit here and say I saw a flying saucer. For all I know, I could have seen a really rare meteorological effect.
Yeah.
That was just because the thing that struck me was not only was it clearly a ball of fire, but it never deviated. It didn't move up and down with the wind. It didn't change direction. It just went on a southerly course out towards the Peak District, which is an area of high strangeness at the best of times, Rick. There's plenty of things been seen over there from all kinds of things. And so when I talk to people, first thing they say, oh, you saw a Chinese lantern. Oh, you saw a meteor. You saw a comet. Now, I'm no astrophysicist, but I have a deep love of space and the race for space and comets and meteors and alien planets. Love it. Find it fascinating. I think I'm out of all my friends, Rick, I think I'm the only one who still tapes Sky at night and watches it religiously once a month. So I'm used to looking and hearing about the big concepts that are sort of bubbling around in the world of astronomy and planetary science, because often it's only when they come into the mainstream that everybody else hears about them. And unless you're really interested in those kinds of subjects, you probably don't have as much depth or hunger to know more than you can read quite easily. But I was convinced. I was thought, well, I don't know what it could be. So I contacted the British Meteorological Society and I said, I think I've seen a meteor. Told them what they saw and they said, no, you can't have it. It was too slow. Because I watched it for about 45 minutes. Right.
Wow.
You know, 2 o'clock in the morning, pitch black. I knew exactly. I knew what it wasn't, like I say. And so even to this day, I am scratching my head because I'm not going to sit here, like I say, and say I saw a flying saucer. Because firstly, it wasn't a saucer. It was a ball of fire.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem to react to anything. It didn't stop, didn't move.
Before it was unidentified. I mean, technically, I suppose you could say that.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an unidentified object that was flying. It was a UFO. But there's the thing, once again, there's the bias straight away. As soon as you say the word UFO, Rick, what do people think you're talking about?
That's right. Yeah, saucers.
Yeah, little green men. All kinds of cliches coming out of the woodwork.
Do you feel you were a spectator on it? It was incidental. You were there by chance, Paul, you know, was it for you? You know, because obviously our friend has many experiences that seem to be sort of designated towards him. Do you think you were just a spectator by chance?
I have to think I was, because it wasn't easy for me to. If I hadn't been in the particular place I was at that particular time, I would never have been aware of it at all, Rick.
Right. Okay.
To be honest, I've never thought of that. Was I meant to see it?
Yeah.
Because obviously, as you refer to there, our mutual friend, and when I've spoken to other people and other experiences, Rick, some of them will think I was meant to be there. This was going to happen. It was meant to happen. And others. Yeah. It was purely by chance. I decided on this particular day to take a different way home, or I decided for some reason I was going to walk my dog at this particular time of day rather than early.
Yeah.
A lot of them are purely by chance, or they might have to go outside for some reason and they see stuff. People might be at a fireworks display, or they're in a plane or something.
Yeah.
And they're just going, oh, look at this brilliant, look at this beautiful view here. And they take a picture, and it's only later when they analyse it, they go, oh, bloody hell, what's that? So, And for me, there's a good kind of counterbalance to that, because I remember about 3 years later, I was living in a different house. It was a quiet Sunday afternoon, summer's day, and I was sat and I could see something out the corner of my eye flying in the sky, a big black shape. And I thought, what the bloody hell is that? Now, if I'd have been someone of a normal interest, I'd go, ooh, that's a bit weird. Whereas I thought, what the bloody hell's that? Got up, went outside, and I stood and watched it. And my eyes were eventually able, after about a minute or so, to get the depth and the distance and the perception to see that what it actually was a great big collection of balloons. You know, like you see at the seaside or at a fair or something, where they've got a massive big collection of balloons and they're all tied together. It was one of them. And it had obviously come loose from somewhere, but it was flying at a certain, obviously it was flying because the wind had got it and taken it and it was off. Now, if I'd not taken the time to spend looking at it, or I thought, or I took it on face value and went, look at this, look, I've just spotted a UFO, fine. But because I want to know that something odd really is odd, because human perception can be wrong on face value as well, Rick. We can misinterpret data. We can misunderstand
the way people act, the way people speak, the things we see. Sometimes our brain just doesn't click straight away. If I hadn't have taken the time, I would have thought, oh, well, I've seen two. But I haven't. I've seen one, and I've also seen a large collection of balloons flying at great speed.
Right.
What about yourself?
It's funny, there is something that I didn't really think about this much, but since you brought up about, must be about almost 30 years ago now, it was 3:30 in the morning, and I was with my two friends, and they two had been drinking, but I hadn't been drinking because I had the car. So I says to Gordon, I says, look, do you fancy going for a drive? Because when we were younger, we used to go driving on the back roads of Perth. You know, it was really beautiful up that way. And because we had been yapping, I was really awake. So he was up for it. So we jumped in the car. So we were on these wee back roads. There isn't a streetlight anywhere. There's nothing, really. And I could remember, the last thing I remember was I could see the light for the stereo shining on Gordon's face, and I remember I looked over because he kind of had his head, and I could see he was nodding off, but I still spoke, and then all of a sudden everything just lit up, this bright gold light. But it was bizarre, because it was like this light was in the car with us. I mean, I remember glancing down to the left, and I could see kind of the sweetie papers on the floor at his feet, and that, you know, the way it was positioned. It was just above us and slightly behind us. And I remember still trying to speak, because I knew his eyes were shut. But as I was speaking, I was starting to, you know, my voice was starting to trail off as I was. So for about 2.5 seconds, I reckon, this strange light was on us, and all of a sudden it goes off. So I looked at him, and he still had his eyes shut. So I was stunned. I didn't know what to do. So it was coming up to the road where we took the left, the road we normally take, and then it happened again. So now I knew for sure that whatever it was following us, Paul. And it did the same thing again. And it didn't last quite as long, but I was shaking so bad I couldn't turn the steering wheel to take the left-hand turn. And then all of a sudden, I kind of seen him sort of snapping out. He says, oh, what happened here? What happened? Because this light had a really bizarre effect on us. So when you shut your eyes, so say, for example, you think of Paul Sinclair, if you imagine take all the colour of that image, just leave the sort of the drawing in, the outline, but everything's saturated in gold.
Yeah.
So I'm sure I was that. I seem to remember the tears streaming down my face at the time, because I was so scared when I realised this thing was up and behind us. We drove, and I actually went to my girlfriend's house, because I didn't want to try. I didn't want to let go of the wheel. I was so terrified. But it was really bizarre. For the next 6 hours, we were kind of sort of energised, and whenever we shut our eyes, we seen this gold light. It was almost as if it saturated us with something. So that did have a profound effect on me. Definitely did. Probably more so than I realised, but I didn't usually talk about that. But that did happen, eh? So whatever it was, it had to be following us, you know, where it first happened, and in the same place, it was just above and slightly behind us.
You do hear those kind of encounters where people feel as though they're being bathed in light, Rick.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, and for you to have that experience where you are aware, it's as if like you're kind of pushing through time, or
yeah,
things seem to be slowing down, and then it just goes whoop, like you've hit fast forward on the tape deck. You've gone whoop,
right, yeah,
and we're back to normal. It's almost as if you've gone through some kind of ripple.
Yeah, that's right.
Or it's just, I don't know. It's weird. I mean, did you have the presence of mind to check the time to make sure nothing was missing? Everything was.
Oh no, there was nothing missing, because we left the house at 3:30 and we got at my ex's house at 3:45, and it was roughly a 6-mile journey. Mm. So all time, everything was spot on. Because she heard us, the car pulling up, screeching to a halt, heard us running up the stairs, you know, so she was awake. So she looked at the time, saying, because she could tell by the car it was my car. So she says it was 3:45 that he's come bursting into the house, all excited, and came, well, what was that? What happened there? Did you see that? And, you know, we were really, really affected by it. Mm-hmm. And like I say, it was strange, because I looked down and I could see his feet. You know, I could see the junk in the bottom of the car where I shouldn't have been able to see that, Paul. You know, the way the light was coming down from the top.
Yeah.
You know, I shouldn't have been able to get into the car. It should have around about the side. And I could see it now as I'm thinking about it. I could just barely make out the back ends of the road. The light was so thick and so powerful that, you know, I just held the wheel straight and then it stopped. But when it happened the second time, that's when I just lost it. Eh? I mean, I couldn't let go of the steering wheel.
Yeah.
I couldn't turn that. I was just absolutely panicking.
It is strange. It's reminded me of an experience which I'm kind of in two camps about, which happened years ago. Like you, Rick, when I was a young lad, I know quite well just how little you can see when you're driving around with your mates at 3 a.m.
Yeah, absolutely.
The only thing that lights up is either the dashboard, the tape deck, and if somebody's having a cigarette. That's it. That's the only light you see. So if anything, you can only see people's faces. You've got no...
That's right.
You'll never see anything in the footwell at all because it's pitch black down there. There's nothing going down there.
Yeah, that's right.
And so many years ago when we were all kids, we all used to kind of that kind of thing. We'd hang out at each other's parents when somebody's parents had gone to the pub or something, Rick. On this one particular night, there was about 6 or 7 of us, and we'd just been sat round, quiet night. We were all like 16, 17, so nobody was drinking or any other substances. And one of the lads said, right, I'm going home now. And he went. And then 5 minutes later, I mean, he was a big lad, this chap. He was called Craig. And he just burst back into the house, white as a sheet, sweating. He's going, oh, my God, you'll not believe it. You'll not believe what's happened to me. You'll not believe what's happened to me. And allegedly, he'd left the house and he was walking down. And as he got about, I don't know, half a mile away, Rick, this beam of light just enveloped him completely.
Right.
And just, and he was like, what the hell is that? Thinking it was a police helicopter.
Right.
But there was no sound, nothing. And then it just suddenly started, the light just started circling around him. And he said, I felt like I was frozen. And then I just snapped free of it. And he ran back to where we were, but he was so disorientated and frightened, he ran into the house 2 doors down.
And it, wow.
And it was only because the dog started barking at him that he realised he'd run into the wrong house. So he ran back out, came to us and said, come here. And we all came out. And by this point, it was flying off towards Manchester. So it was heading sort of northwest from where we were in Yorkshire. And you couldn't hear anything. And it had all these lights on it. Now, to this day, I can't tell you if that just wasn't some kind of weird plane or something. But I knew this lad enough. And we didn't, you know, we weren't sort of always trying to frighten each other and create big stories to pull each other's legs, Rick. He was...
No, you know him.
Yeah, he was one of them lads. He wasn't that kind of guy. It wasn't his thing to kind of talk about ghosts and silly things like, in his opinion, silly things like that. They weren't his bread and butter. He wasn't bothered. So for it to happen to him and to see the reaction of what it had done to him and how he was behaving, because this kid, you know, he was 6'4". He was built like an outside toilet, as we say. Up north.
It was genuine. His reaction was genuine.
Yeah, and that was the same. There was 6 or 7 of us, and we watched these lights fly off for about an hour. No sound, nothing. Now, I can't tell you what that was. I can tell you how it affected him, and therefore that's always made me scratch my head, because we only saw the after effects of the event.
Yeah.
We didn't see this beam of light or this strange swirling thing that he reported. So I don't know. Did we watch the tail end of something? I don't know. All I know is a very down to earth, good, solid, tough lad was frightened out of his skin.
Yeah. See, I think the thing is, I kind of held a bit of the story back for you there, Paul, but I might as well be 100% honest with you. See, I think part of the reason why I haven't spoken about this much was because that night after we came back for the pub at the Barky 12, I had decided that I was going to tell my two friends that I absolutely believed in the existence of UFOs and aliens, and that I was absolutely committed to getting the truth. So what had happened was I had kind of had this powwow with the two of them. He says, look, this is where I am. I know I'm right. I'm going forward with this, blah, blah, blah. So to then say we went in the car and seen the light, that is how it happened, Paul. You know, that's the only thing that kind of threw me, that kind of stopped me from speaking about it. But that was the case. So you were talk about UFOs that you were into, and then you seen that bit. But that's what kind of stunned me. That's what made me wonder, well, what is it that I did see? But that was actually how it happened. And that was the irony of it, because one of my friends had fell asleep, or he would have been there with us. So the next day when I went and told him what happened, I mean, he didn't doubt us for a moment. He could see us, the reaction, Paul, the way we were still sort of chatting about it so excitedly. Mm. So, like, you don't want to believe this. You know, we left because he knew a bit more, because at that time, he was the first one to have Sky.
Yeah.
So when he was watching these documentaries, he knew that I was talking about the things that I shouldn't have access to. So he could see, you know, that I was coming to the conclusions, the conclusions they were coming for. So it was just so happened that night I decided, right, I'm going to lay my cards on the table. This is where I am. This is what I'm going forward to. I don't care what you say. You know, I'm absolutely committed to this. So by the time I went through all that and spoke about it and kind of have a laugh with it, like I say, the drink was starting to affect Damon. Bryce had fell asleep.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We left the house, and that's what happened. And I suppose that's what's kind of made me stay sort of quiet about it. But I just feel I just had to tell you that there, just because, I mean, it was a hell of a coincidence if it was a coincidence, if that's what happened. But that really did what happened, and that kind of sort of brings you to the paranormal aspects of these sort of things, which does occur. Yeah, cleared that to them.
Yeah. No, it is odd sometimes that you'll hear reports and people say, oh, well, I was watching a documentary, or we were talking about a particular case or something, and then they've gone for a drive and they've seen something. And people say, oh, well, it's in your mind. But, yeah, if you see a strange light in the sky, you can get yourself in a state of mind, Rick, that you think, oh, look at that. That's blimey, I can't believe we've just been talking about this, and there they are. Whereas what you saw and what I saw aren't the cliched things. We know what it wasn't, and therefore we can't explain what happened. We can just tell you the event, and you can make your mind up out of it. And I think it's very difficult often when you see it so many times, people will be dismissed because, oh, well, they're interested in this subject. Well, to be fair, if somebody is taking the time to go out and look at the skies all the time, then more likely,
is it? Yeah.
You know, it's something I do a lot more than I have done. And Paul Sinclair's bad influence on me, Rick.
I
spend more time now looking outside and looking at the night sky than I ever did when I was really into UFOs as a young person. So I see strange things. I've got apps on my phone, so I can always, you know, flight tracking and things like that. And that alone blows your mind as well, because you don't realize how many planes are above your house at one time as well. So it just shows you how little you can actually see that's going on.
Yeah. I mean, I think regarding Paul, there's definitely something unique going on for him. I mean, the light that he has seen is definitely making connections with him. You know, it's there for him. And when you read his book, The Night People, you know, some of the stories he encounters, you know, looking at his bedroom window, I just can't believe it was coincidence he looked at his bedroom window as a wee boy and seen that light they were going across the houses, or when he was out with his mum and dad in the car, you know, and they're driving about and they just happened to see that light. But he isn't the normal way it happens. He's you know, there is stuff going on for Paul, and there's no doubt about that. So it does happen. Sometimes there seems to be a connection from above. But personally, I believe that it all goes back to the pressure. You know, they have, for want a better word, they choose people to be prophets for them. You know, they choose people to step forward. So there are people that have encounters with the cryptids since they were small, and the cryptids didn't hurt them. You know, they often go through a shaky period with them where they kind of learn to be with them, and then these people eventually come forward and speak out for them. Because there's so many of these podcasters that claim to have these incidents when they were younger, and eventually I got to the point, well, look, there's something going on there. So I do believe they are being used by them to take this out. You know, and Paul's is a really probably the best example I've seen of that. Mm. You know, when you look at his book and Weed Night People, it's you know, I think the things that could be his experience could be explained by really, really advanced science, Paul.
Yeah, I think it was, as I said to Paul when we were talking about it, he came on and we did an episode about Night People when it came out, right? And And I said to him at the time, because I know how these things work when people come forward with certain claims, regardless of how well their reputations may have been built to that point. And obviously, I don't think Paul was surprised. I thought it was a very brave move of him to release that book.
Yeah, I think so.
Because he didn't need to do it, Rick.
No.
You know, he could have carried on Truth Proof, collecting all the strange things that are going on out there at the East Coast. And I've had the pleasure of spending some time with Paul and Bob out there at Bempton as well, which was very generous of him to give up an evening to put up with me on my birthday UFO spotting, Rick. And I said to him, I would imagine that you've had people just sort of push you away and go, no, I think you've gone too far. As though he wants to lay all that out, because regardless of everything else in regards to the strangeness, there's a lot of personal stuff in that book that men of a certain age wouldn't like to talk about with friends. Never mind put it all down in black and white and let the world read it, Rick.
Bear your soul to the world, Paul.
Absolutely. So I would imagine, similar to how Paul's had some of that, obviously a lot of people have continued to support him, and even more so, and good luck to him, because he's a bloody good bloke. I would imagine, with these theories and the controversial aspects of it, I don't particularly think what you're saying is overly controversial personally, Rick. I've heard a lot weirder, I'll be honest, my friend.
Well, that makes me feel better, actually, Paul.
Good. I would imagine, as with anything, there are always people that have a dog in a fight, regardless.
Yeah.
And they have a belief system, be it about ghosts, Bigfoot, UFOs, alien contact, creatures living under the sea, secret UFO air bases in Antarctica. People, when you come forward with something like this and you say, no, what you're saying, what you believe in is completely wrong, I think it's this, I would imagine people have just gone, you're talking absolute rubbish. Even though they may believe in something as far out, right?
Yeah.
Just because your theory isn't what they believe, they therefore aren't interested. They think you're being too out there. I often find this crazy that in certain aspects of this, there is a line that certain people will not cross because it gets too weird. And I think of all the wonderful cases, like we mentioned earlier, Hopkinsville, Flatwoods, the Dover Demon, you know, three especially weird creatures that are neither, are they aliens? Are they cryptids? Are they something in between? Are they robots? Whatever. They don't fit in the pattern, because the thing that, for me, that keeps those particular cases separate is they seem to be one-off in events. There's not a large body of evidence for people meeting 10-foot levitating robots in Backwoods.
That's right.
Or being assaulted by a group of gleefully odd goblins dancing about.
Yeah.
People always encounter the same, it's the same kind of things. So when you get an odd case, it stands out for me, because I just think, well, that's a bit weird. So I would imagine, Rick, that people have really pushed back and said, no.
Well, see, what you said about the octopus. I mean, I haven't seen anything connected with aliens that's as incredible as what you pointed out about the octopus. You know, if that's what nature could do, you know, that's the basis on what I'm saying that the pressure are working on. So when you see what nature can do, when you take that and multiply that by 100,000 years of technology and that, I think it's all well within a reasoning. You know, I mean, I really believe it's other humans that have designed this, and as humans, we could reach it. But you're right, these one-off events, They are just happen now and again, but they're enough. They gain so much traction that they do seem, and they often go in the opposite direction in the main sort of theme. So for cryptids and that, you know, there's a lot of dogman signs, a lot of Bigfoot signs and that, and then something like that comes along and it takes you the other way. Well, where does that fit into it? Because it's still displaying telepathy, You know, it's still displaying, you know, the feelings, the anxiety, you know, feeling watched, which I believe has been created by the electromagnetic energy that the entities are creating. You know, I really believe that's what's happening with this, the mind speak, Paul, that you're falling within a certain distance of the cryptid. It's producing this electromagnetic energy and it's sending its thoughts like a transmitter as a pulse of energy into the human brain. You know, and it's the same with when the cloak. So what I think's happening there is, if you could imagine, they have these electrical organs in their body, they discharge the electricity, the current causes electromagnetic field, the photons allow the light photons to go straight through and thus render it invisible. So I think all these things are explainable, but it's difficult, obviously, mate. Eh? I mean, it really is.
Well, of course it is. But, you know, you only have to look at what we take for granted. And I've raised this point before, Rick. You look at something like television, right? Everybody has a TV. Most people have two these days. Some people have more.
Yeah.
There are a few people that don't have any. Fair play to them if that's what they want to do. Good luck to them. But if you try to if you say to somebody, tell me how that works, they can't tell you. All they do they turn it on, they choose the channel. That's it.
Yeah.
They can't tell you how that picture's there.
Exactly.
How it works, what frequency it's on. They can't do it. And even if you try to explain to another person, as we're talking about here, if you went 100 years back with the television we've got now and said, look at this, they'd think you were either a time traveler. Well, you would be a time traveler. They'd think that you were either mad or this was madness. This can't be true. How on earth?
Yeah.
You know, there are famous anecdotal stories about the first time they showed moving pictures and it was of a train coming towards them, Rick, and people ran out of the cinema.
Right.
Because
they
thought it was going to come out the screen and kill them all.
Yeah.
And so you look at how people react to even just things we take for granted today, and you even have to go back. You only have to think, well, if this is where we are now in 2023, where are we going to be in 2123? What's going to be happening here?
Yeah.
Where are we going to be going? Because it seems that technology seems to be getting even quicker and faster and pushing the boundaries on every aspect.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to things that, as I say, we take for granted. You look at how even listening to music has evolved in just 60 years, from people having a big chunky 8-track to now you can have 20,000 songs on something as big as your phone in your pocket.
Yeah. Arthur C. Clarke said, when we're confronted with sufficiently advanced technology, we will call it magic. And that's what I find.
Yep.
You know, that things that are classed as supernatural actually aren't as supernatural. But I understand how people get to that point. You know, I really do. I mean, see the shadow people. See, I divide the Pesha fleet into two different divisions. There's the bioweapons division, which is the aliens, the cryptids, the demons, the angels sort of thing. And then there's the energy division with the shadow people, the orbs, things like that are made of electromagnetic energy. In 2018, Paul, scientists at MIT managed to bind three light photons together, which didn't sound very impressive, but considering they're massless, this is a big step forward.
Yep.
I believe things like the shadow people actually are technology. But obviously, when we spoke the night, Paul, I couldn't go into everything. I had to kind of pick what, you know, sort of one strand of the theory and you know, stick with that. But it's just to point out that the technology is all around about us. And that's part of that they're cleverly disguising it. You know, they're disguising it as other things so that we won't think we're dealing with technology.
Interesting. So, Rick, before I let you go, where are you going next with this? What happens next for you? I know you've mentioned that you're wanting to come forwards and talk about these. And I had a fascinating conversation with you. You really made me think about a lot of things that I've never really considered before and take on board. Because like I said to you, you know, you might think I was joking. I've heard a lot stranger.
Well, that actually means quite a lot to me that you said that, Paul, because obviously, as I take this out, I need to refine the theory. People are going to have questions on that. So this was a big deal for me, coming to speak to you like this. This is how I really appreciate you giving me this chance. So it's going to be going forward with us. I'm going to be speaking to Paul to a greater extent and completely lay the whole theory in front of him and say, look, this is where it is, and, you know, see what comes of that. So I intend to be going forward with it. But if I could give you my email address, if you could put it out to anybody who has anything that they would like to contact with me or regarding our even questions or that, Paul, that would be appreciated.
Absolutely. I'll put the email in the show notes and if anybody wants to drop you a line, then I'm happy to do that. Or if you want, Rick, people can contact me and I'll be more than happy to send their details on to you, my friend. Either way, whatever works best for you, I'm no problem.
Well, do it the first way then, Paul, just because I'm not going to land you with too much work, because I really appreciate what you've done for me. So if you could just put my email address up, and obviously I would see how things go and maybe come back to you again and go into the different parts of the theory that we've not managed to cover. I'm pretty much, I'm very sort of intuitive, Paul. You know, I kind of try to feel my way through things, so... This is the next big step, starting with people like yourself, you know, sort of friendly fire, for want of a better word, and then sort of branch out from there. So we'll see what comes of this, because I'm sure someone is going to come with us,
yeah.
You know, speak with you tonight.
Absolutely. Well, listen, as I've said, it's been fantastic to have a chat with you about these theories and these thoughts. I will look forward to having another conversation with you, Rick, down the line, in regards to some of the other aspects. But I just want to say thank you very much for your time, your theories, your conversation and your points. And I wish you all the very best. And I can't wait to see what you come with next.
Thanks very much, Paul. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.